They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me on the Commons today is Rodney Gray. Rodney, I've known Rodney for a while. He's one of the few people that I've also met across the country that I've been communicating for a long time. So, Rodney, thank you so very much for joining us. I'm going to let you introduce yourself to my listeners because I want them to understand exactly who you are and how long you've been working on this.
Hello, everyone. My name is Rodney Gray. I've been working on this project, actually, I'd say since 2006. I was just finishing up as a film student at Temple University in Philadelphia, and I was wrapping up a short documentary about slumlords. And when I was working on that project, my mom called me one day and was talking about a homeowner association and a board member being very abusive and getting out of control. And I thought, well, call your state legislators or something and just, you know, deal with it that way. And I didn't even know what they were at the time. But before I left Philadelphia and went back to Texas for business school, I started asking more questions. And then I started contacting legislators, city officials, and they kept saying, we don't get involved with this. It's a civil matter.
Yeah.
I even called, spoke to a staffer at a U.S. Senator's office. Everyone pretty much said the same thing, that we don't get involved with this, and because it's a civil matter. And then when I got to business school at the University of Dallas, I started doing an independent study about making a film about a documentary on the homeowner association industry, particularly in the Grand Prairie, Texas area, where my mom was at. And I wanted to find out, to identify a problem, and see if there was some kind of solution and do a short film off of that. But it just started getting bigger, and I started meeting people like you, Shu, and Bill Davis and Dr. McKenzie, and just one person right after another. And I started speaking to people, and they would tell me stories. And I started to see it as more of a, Arizona, Florida. And I'd start gathering stories, putting stories together. But when I finished finished business school, instead of going back out into the workforce, I enrolled at University of North Texas in their radio, television, and film program. And I thought, I'm going to make a feature documentary here. And I started small. I started in Grand Prairie in my mom's neighborhood, and then I started lingering out, and I started asking questions about John Corona, who's the CEO of Associates. Started asking about him, who was in Texas, who used to be a state senator.
Right.
And around that same time, I started getting stories about people allowed up in particularly Frisco, Texas, where people were not allowed. The HOA said only certain vehicles were allowed in the driveways. If it was a classy vehicle, it was okay. But if it was a Ford, that's bad, but Lincolns were okay, and I thought, how ridiculous.
That was the one.
And then I was looking at your, you could say you were humorous, like, what is the HOA doing type of story that I would get on the news. And then that incident happened with Captain Michael Clower, where he's in the Iraqi war. And regardless whether his wife was opening up the mail from the HOA over a penalty of over a I think pastors of $800. While he was in the Iraqi war, they took his home and sold it, his $300,000 home, and sold it for $3,200.
Mm-hmm.
I was very angry. Being a veteran that I am from the Marines, I became very angry, and I wanted somebody, I don't care how many news stories are covering about this, I want this one in my project. I want, when I do my HOA documentary, I want him in it. And I started calling, before he came back from Iraq, I started talking to his wife a few times, and she would tell me what was going on. Then when he came over, we started meeting. But I started filming my project, I would say, in 2009 is when I started filming it, the first year I was in school. And it was offered me at University of North Texas in the film program because I didn't want to do any other stories other than Homeowner Association. I was just, this is a problem, and all my time and effort is going to go into this and nothing else. And I started covering things in my neighborhood, Captain Michael Clower. I went down and spoke to Bill Davis. I started finding out HOAs that were managed by John Corona's company, Associa, and 50 other names that he uses. And I started talking to the people. Now, I didn't put everybody I interviewed in my film, but the stories that I felt were very well connected and showed people's hardship that they were going through and living in an HOA community, and how they were not getting any recourse from anyone. And then I ventured out. And then that story in Las Vegas that happened with the conspiracy, with I think it was 40 to 60 people, and the deaths that were going on, people say suicide or murder, and it was just, I saw that big conspiracy, and I knew the FBI was out there investigating these stories about these construction defect scam that were going on in Las Vegas. And I thought, well, I'm going out to Nevada now. But that's where my project started going. It's as if it got willed, and I headed out to Nevada. And but one thing I want to bring up, particularly when I was filming in my mom's home area, I went to a board meeting. And keep in mind, going back to something I said earlier, when I first got to Grand Prairie, I would contact the city legislators, the city attorney's office, city councilman, and I would contact them about the HOA abuse, and they would always say, that's a civil matter, we don't get right. involved.
Right.
Then when we had a incident in the San Grande Property Owner Association in Grand Prairie, where my mom lives, we went to a board meeting because there was a news story about the board racially profiling people in that area about who they would allow to move into the mobile homes and who they would not allow, and questions about citizenship. So I started looking into that, but there was a news story. Then the city council and the board of directors wanted to get together and make peace with all the neighbors in that area, but they only invited about 12 people.
How
and
many,
my mom was one of the ones.
How many people in the association?
About 180.
So they were only inviting 12 out of 180.
They invited about 12. And a lot of people didn't want to show up because they believed it was a waste of time. So I went in there, and I'm there with my mom and Fred McMahon, the one in my documentary where you see where they put a fence in his driveway, splitting his driveway in half. He was there, and another elderly person. It was those three, and I went in there. And the city councilman actually invited me to go in there because I told him they sent out a bulletin with the city council and the property owner association's name at the bottom of the letter. And I thought, are you connected with the board in some way? He said that they shouldn't have sent that out. But he invited me to the board meeting, and I went in there to listen to the grievances. And during that meeting, they brought in a police officer off duty who had a badge and a firearm. And they set up at this table in front of a room, and the police officer sat right beside the board president. And the board members were scattered out in the background, but they would jump in and they would ask the homeowners their grievance. And the board president would argue back with the homeowners, one of the three that were there. And she was arguing with my mom. And the police officer just jumped up and started arguing with my mother about HOA policy. And I thought, oh, my gosh, even though the city of Grand Prairie does not want to be involved in civil matters, you have a police officer there, a city police officer, jumping up and arguing with the homeowners about HOA policy and arguing on behalf of the board president. I found out later he was on payroll there, but he would argue and he got up and walked around and just started discussing HOA legislation and that he lived in an HOA and he knew a lot about them. And he went on he spoke for about 5 to 10 minutes. But when he sat back down, I would look over during the meeting when the city councilman was speaking or the assistant city attorney was speaking. I would look over there, and he was goofing around, like having a little private conversation with the board president, giggling and such. And I looked over at him, and I said, it was getting a little annoying. And I said, excuse me, could you stop goofing around? And he threatened me. He said, raise your voice like that to me again, I will do something to you that you won't like.
Ooh.
And I said, are you threatening me? He said, it's not a threat, it's a promise. And I thought, here I am with a police officer. And I had, being from a military background and living in Dallas, I've had quite a few good relationships with police officers. So I don't mean any ill towards them at all. But he was there making some kind of vile threat at me, and I got pretty upset. And I thought, so I started thinking back, if the legislators and city officials won't get involved with the homeowners' problems because it's a civil matter, why is the police officer in there arguing on their behalf and threatening me?
You know, you may...
I just asked him...
You raise an excellent point, Rodney, because for years I've been hearing from people who say that the police, the actual police, were there and they were evicting them out of the meetings. A little old lady who used to live in Virginia, I think she moved, called me, and I put it on the air years and years and years ago. And she was the first one who said that the board meeting was in the president's home. She and her neighbor went. They were invited in. They sat down. They were offered a drink. While the woman went to get a drink, she called the police and said that they were trespassing and to have them removed. So they were actually arrested, two owners. When I put that on, I had a lot of people say, "Shoo, you can't do that. You can't put that out there. They're nuts. They're crazy." But you know what, Rodney? Over the years, I have heard the same story over and over and over again. People were prevented from going into meetings because they allegedly might disrupt the meeting. The police have come in, have handcuffed them, and kept them in a hot cruiser or a cold cruiser, mm-hmm. while the meeting was going on, so to prevent them from going in. It just boggles the mind that the police will do this, yet if you call them for something, oh, it's a civil matter, go to court. Hire an attorney, go to court. Your tax dollars don't mean a damn thing here.
And when this happened, I had a friend that was a police officer at McKinney, and I told him about it. And he'd actually been a police officer that went to HOA meetings for security. And he couldn't believe what I was saying. He said, Rodney, when I go to those meetings, I do not get involved with those discussions. They have nothing to do with me. I'm just there if somebody gets way out of line and or gets hostile. And he said he couldn't believe that happened. But he said that I should put a complaint against that police officer. So I did. And then basically, I'd say about a month later, I heard back, they completely whitewashed everything he said to me.
Yeah.
And said that I was being disruptive while he was being professional. And I thought, oh, it goes back to the, that's not a threat, it's a promise. So it's just that I got really upset being threatened by a police officer when I couldn't understand why he was arguing with homeowners on behalf of a board president And I found out later he was paid to be there. And I know, you know, that's where his loyalty is going to be. But you still have a police officer there with a badge and a firearm promoting, well, arguing on behalf of a board president against, you know, against my mother. And I believed he was displaying some immaturity at that, and that's when I addressed it. He, you know, I started getting threats, and I thought, oh, my God. But
you have to wonder, Rodney, why on earth in a community, if we call them communities, where everybody's supposed to, you know, participate, it belongs to everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that we need police there? There's something really screwy about this whole system. There's something so wrong with this.
Even months later, when they had an election to vote the members out, they had three. They did it on city property, and they had three uniformed city police officers there. And I thought, and I wasn't, you know, I mentioned in my documentary, I wasn't allowed in there, of course, because I was a member of the HOA, but. And Fred McMahon, the guy with the fence put down the center of his driveway, he wasn't allowed in there either. I brought that up. But it got me, I was already passionate about doing a project on the HOA, but this is this crossed the line with me, and I wanted people to know. But, and I'm not in any way saying that I've had more hardship, than people, other people that have been, had similar issues like this. But it just got to me, and I saw, well, this is very strange what's going on here, and nobody's saying anything about it. And after all that happened, I just kept, you know, I stayed the course and just started talking to more people and asking them their stories and went down to Houston, spoke to some of the people there, talked to Dan Selleck, who comes up in my documentary, but he basically lost their condo. And this was more, not so much as the, HOA board, but more with the city, where he was in an HOA, but when the city told all the people in the condo to get out, they were still required to pay their HOA management. And their property taxes, and it's created a lot of lawsuits. But I went down there, and then the stories in Nevada, and you had that conspiracy going on with the construction defect scams that were going on there, but it was being investigated by the FBI, so I couldn't get a lot of people talking to me about it, because that's the primary reason I want to go out there. However, I became in contact with Darcy Spears, who was running HOA Hall of Shame, and she was actually shaming some of the board members who were, and I'm talking about being way out of line, cutting people's water off, board members going around the street and bullying people, locking people in their homes was one of the things that happened.
Locking people in the homes, in their own homes?
Yeah, well, we had Joe Bitsky, who... he ran an HOA in Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, I believe, and he would hold all the board meetings in his home. And the Nevada statutes say that all HOA meetings are to be recorded. And he invited the members over to his home for an HOA meeting. And then he told them, he said, this is not an official HOA meeting. This is a meet and greet. So... no recorders. But one of the women brought in a recorder, and they were having their HOA meeting, although he was calling it something else. And he noticed the recording. And the two women that were in there with that recorder, and he refused to let them leave his home. So he just stood up in front of the door and said, you can't leave here until you give me that recorder. So he kept them there, and the police got there. And apparently told him, you can't lock people in your house. And let the people leave. He was later charged with 2 counts of coercion, fined $1,300, and required to go to anger management training. And when they would interview him after this incident, he told Darcy Spears to stay on the board because no one else can run it except him. And we would see all this. But going back to Darcy Spears, and I hope I'm not jumping around too much, but back to what I believe we had mentioned at one time, the whole talking point of Community Associations Institute, CAI, is isolated incident. So when I met with Darcy Spears, the investigative reporter, that's the very first question I wanted to ask her. Is I said, what do you think of when you think of isolated incident? And she came up with a great response. He said, isolated incident means one. There's one isolated. But when it starts getting 2, 5, 10, 20, he said, that's not the best term to use for it anymore. And you know as well as I do that these aren't isolated incidents. No. That's going on all over the country at HOA.
No.
I mean, it's everywhere. But the CAI talking point is that something isolated, that they talk about, they don't talk about all the airplanes that landed safely that day. They talk about the isolated one that crashed. And they present their talking point that way. But I got with Darcy Spears, went over to Joe Bisky was the board president. I went to his neighborhood and interviewed a couple of the homeowners there. One was the lady that was locked in his home, and the other one was a guy who had brought up issues at meetings about Joe Bisky's behavior and asked questions about their accounting and how they were receiving payments, things like that. And I remember one time he told me Bisky threw a book at him during one of the board meetings.
Nice.
About the real estate laws in Nevada. But I ended up interviewing him, and I went to that area, and I called Joe Bisky. I wanted to get him. I wanted to talk to him on camera, but he would not come outside. So I took one of the homeowners across the street, and I interviewed him on the sidewalk in one situation, hoping that he would come outside and talk.
He never did.
And eventually he got thrown off the board. It took a while. They threw him off the board. And he left them. I don't remember the exact amount, but he left the HOA bank account was left with about something like $45-$50. That's all he left.
Oh, geez.
Because part of the reason why I got thrown off the board is because I forgot the name of it exactly, but there is some board that regulates HOAs in Nevada. And he went in front of that board and they threw him off the board because he couldn't account for all these payments that the HOA was making to amusement parks and internet websites and car washes. He couldn't account for any of that. And that's when he was thrown off the board, and then he left him with about $45 when he was thrown off the board. And then the two of the people that I interviewed, they went on the board in his place. And the last time I spoke to them, they hadn't received anything yet. He was fined well over, I think, $100,000 and told to reimburse the HOA of all the money that was missing. But from the last I spoke to them, they hadn't received anything yet.
So he's in violation. Well, no, it's not a court order, is it? He didn't go to court.
He went up, and I can't remember the name of that.
There's a panel, I think, that Senator Mike Schneider established. It's mostly made up of CAI, mostly industry, mostly CAI-affiliated attorneys and managers. And so to try and get something through there that's homeowner friendly is very, very difficult, but apparently there was no way they could excuse this behavior.
Right. And I am so sorry. If I would have been asked this a few years ago, I could just rattle off what the name of this group was, and I can't remember right now.
Yeah, I can't either. Every state has something, and they all have different names. So.
But I knew they, I think he got a lifetime ban. And then I went over to Paradise Fall, where you had a former state senator, Bill O'Donnell, was the new HOA president there. And they came up with Paradise Fall had received two fire damage claims from an insurance company. So you've got two fire damage claims from two separate fires and a reserve fund, totaling about $1.1 million. And it's on a balance sheet, I believe it's during 2010, for the month of July. And then August, it's all gone. And the former board treasurer had transferred it over to a bank account over in California somewhere. So Bill O'Donnell started asking questions. And the same panel that we were just talking about earlier started requesting financial records from him, and he would never turn them over. And Bill O'Donnell confronted this former board treasurer. His name's Aaron Yosifar. He asked him about it, and he said Aaron's response was, let's just move forward. He was told, we're not just going to move forward. You need to put the money back, the $1.1 million, back in the HOA funds. And long story short, he ended up going to, he was found guilty. He pled guilty to felony theft, and he ended up going to jail for a month over an issue of felony theft involving $1.1 million. He was being investigated by the FBI and the state attorney general. And I believe it was the Nevada state attorney general that brought up charges against him when he took the guilty plea. During that time, we should have got this on camera, I called him and asked Aaron Yosifar, and I didn't accuse him of anything. I said, do you know anything about that money? Can you get the money back in there? Because the homeowners at Paradise Fall really need that money because the fire damages. Some of them were being told to leave their properties. And usually people being investigated by the FBI don't usually want to talk to strangers on the phone, but I identified myself as a film director. And I told him when I was calling him that I was in his HOA board office, calling him, asking about that money. And Darcy Spears even asked him about it later on, I believe during a court hearing. But that was one of the other stories that was going on. And the other thing, I stayed at Dr. Gary Solomon's place. I had a great time there. It was great to, we did a lot of the interviews over there, and they were very helpful with me getting everything set up. And Gary Solomon's was one of the last people I interviewed during that time. And he talked more about the, something that I'd seen myself where he's talking about the board member on the board who gets in control and just loves that power. And that power is like a drug to them.
Yeah.
And when the HOA, I'm sorry?
I said, yes, I agree. I'm agreeing.
And when the HOA board member gets thrown off, they want back on there. They're doing everything they can to get back on that board. And this is a volunteer position, and I wonder why is somebody going crazy to get back on that board. It's that trip. And I tell people, I'm not saying that all, because I know people on HOA boards that are not bad people at all by any means, but there's those people that are.
Yeah.
And they want that. Oh, they want absolute control over everything. I've seen people where they take the bylaws or the CC&Rs, change them, go to I think it's county clerk's office, get them notarized, get them stamped, and then bring them back to the HOA. Say these are your new rules. Nobody voted on any of it or anything. The board president decided to do it. That was a situation that came up where my mom lived.
There have been incidents where board members have had a number of different varieties or editions of the covenants, the declaration, and they'll have them in the desk drawer. They'll pull out whatever one is going to help them with their current position. Whatever it says, whatever they're dealing with, here, it's in the declaration. Here, it's in the declaration. They'll just pull it out and give it to you. People need to understand, don't accept a declaration from the HOA. Go to the courthouse and get a copy, because if it is not recorded, it is not valid. And if it's been changed recently, if the date is recent, make sure it was amended properly, because there's a supermajority requirement for people to vote for the amendment.
Yeah.
And like you said, they will just change them and just go in and record them. And that doesn't work. You can't do that.
Nope.
You can't do that. So, I met you in Las Vegas when you were staying with Gary Solomon, Gary and Robin, yep. And you had your crew with you, and you were doing all the interviews and talking to people. So you've been working. You did a lot of work on this documentary, a whole lot of work.
Oh, gosh. I got a lot of help from a couple of people who are down in Austin now. I had a great cinematographer out of New York City. My editors and my co-producer, you got Robert Bowler, Zachary Hona out of Austin, and then Dominic Karin out of New York City. She's a great cinematographer. I had worked with her a little in Philadelphia at Temple University. But we worked on that project. Oh, gosh. We didn't finish editing it until I moved up to South Dakota. I think it was November 2014 is when we actually wrapped it up, where I'm thinking, okay, we're going to start submitting to festivals now. And we did that. That was about 2014. So far, I've had it screened at Dallas Film Festival, and then there was a Las Vegas Liftoff online festival where I got to screen it, where actually people could actually go in there, and I think it was an $8 fee. And none of that money went to me, so everybody knows that.
That's a swizz. That's a swizz, Rodney. You did all the work, and they get the money, right?
But they, I've actually worked with film festivals, and I've seen, a lot of these people. I mean, I didn't mind it so much because I've worked with a couple of film festivals in the Dallas area. You've got volunteers there, and some of these people are on string budgets. So I'm not so about that. But, I don't receive anything when they do screen it. But it was given an opportunity for people to see it, because people had asked me on Facebook many times, when are we going to see your film? It's been going on for quite a few years, when are we going to see it? So we had the opportunity to put it online. And it may very well happen again with the, there's another Liftoff Festival that's going to be out of Los Angeles. So we may be able to do it one more time. I also, I screened my film in downtown Dallas last October, and then 2 months ago, the Black Hills Film Festival out of all places in Rapid City, South Dakota, in the Mount Rushmore area, they wanted to show my film out there. So I went to the other side of the state. And I had a great time, and it was a really terrific festival that screened my film out there, and I got to meet a lot of interesting people, and I had about a half, and these are people that aren't necessarily involved with homeowner associations at all. Some of them, before they saw my film, didn't even know what one was, but I had half an hour of questions.
Oh, really?
From those people. Saying, what is going on here?
Awesome.
Well, how in the world can somebody do this?
So, Rodney, I missed it because I was up to my ears and stuff. The documentary, well, first of all, let's tell people what it's called.
What's that?
What's the documentary called?
Oh, my documentary is called The Hoax.
It was available through this a festival very briefly. It wasn't available for very long.
No, just for a period of a week.
So once you're through with all of the festivals, will it be a little more available? Can you put it on, say, I don't know, the Apple Store and have people buy it, download it?
We haven't really decided that yet. Well, I mean, I haven't. What I'm wanting to do is I should wrap up the film festival circuit by November of this year.
Okay.
I'm not submitting to any more film festivals after that.
Why not?
What's that?
Why not? I mean, what are the advantages of submitting it to a film festival, and what are the disadvantages?
Well, the thing with the submitting it to a film festival is that people are seeing it, and it'll pick up some press. Some of the more, you could say your Tier 1 film festival, something like Slam Dance, Sundance, Toronto, you have the chance of meeting distributors and getting your film distributed.
Okay.
Where they could actually buy it. That's how that would work. The other thing is, I've been submitting it to festivals. I would say this will cover about a two-year span. It's getting to where it's more of a dated piece where I'm going to have less of a chance of getting it into a festival because of the age. But I was going to do it for a year, and it turned into 2 years of submitting to festivals. And after that, I'm not going to submit anymore, and I may try to get it. I mean, I can't give a solid answer, but I mean, I could end up putting it on YouTube. I could end up, you know, asking something similar to like Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure exactly. I just want to see what it's going to be doing and what interest it gets up until November of this year. And then I'll definitely have an answer by then of what I'm going to do.
What are the chances of you doing a follow-up?
I wouldn't be doing another follow-up documentary, but what I highly considered was a screenplay. That came up during an interview last October when I was at the Dallas Video Fest. I was being interviewed there. My documentary came out at the festival around the same time they were showing 99 Homes was at the movie theaters, and that's about the real estate crash from 2008. People were comparing my documentary to some of that movie. And one of the people interviewing me said, well, Winter, he says, I really liked your documentary, but it made me very angry.
Yes.
That's what I heard a lot, was people would watch it, made them very angry at what they saw that I was showing my film. But then they came out and said, when are you going to do a screenplay? When are you going to write? And I've written screenplays before, mostly as class projects and films, and I've wrote a couple of feature screenplays, but I thought, I should really go on with this, and that would be my, I guess you could say that's my follow-up, is I want to eventually go into a screenplay somewhat based on a true story, get that out to, and you can submit screenplays to film festivals now. But that's where I might want to go with this now.
How long is The Hoax?
The Hoax is at about 75 minutes.
Okay, so if you do a screenplay, how long would that be?
That would be, I would think, probably something like, I mean, if I was to write it, they estimate that a screenplay is a minute a page. I'd probably be anywhere from 90 to 110 pages, somewhere like that.
So almost a movie length.
Yes, and I'm just guessing right now, but it would be a feature screenplay. It wouldn't be a short 20 to 30 minute project. No, I would want to do a complete screenplay on this one. I have some ideas, a lot of what happened out of Vegas with the construction defect lawsuits where people end up there being a big conspiracy, people dying. But I'm not sure I would just necessarily follow that by the letter. But that's just an idea that I have right now. And I thought about showing it more of a perspective of someone on the inside, someone inside the HOA industry, struggling with her conscience, where I might want to go with this. But
interesting. I like that.
Just now. Yeah.
Rodney, any thoughts, any ideas as to why the courts have sealed a lot of the investigation done by the FBI? Because we don't know everything. We don't know the outcome of years and years and years of investigations and the deaths and all of that. There's so much of that that's been sealed.
I wouldn't I wouldn't know so much as the reason. Well, I wouldn't be able to give an answer on the reasoning of that. The only thing I know is that the Las Vegas Review-Journal, one of their writers, I'm trying to remember his name, Mr. German, but he's the only one, I believe, that's been covering this.
Yes.
And that's it. No one else. And I had mentioned before, Bob Massey, who's on Fox and Friends every morning, he's the property man in Las Vegas. You would think that he would bring that up because it covered a span of many years and it involved a big conspiracy involving just construction defect scams within, I believe, 12 separate HOAs. And the one of the stories in that was the law firm that was in, one of the big law firms that was involved with all of this. The lady, Nancy Kwan, on top, after a second time, committed suicide. And it's just that you would think that people would want to cover the story more broad stream within the media. But if you ever bring this story up, people will not just say, I've never heard anything like that.
Yeah.
Except if you're reading the Review Journal out of Vegas, you're not going to know anything about it. So
I know the mainstream media has done such a bloody awful job of doing their jobs, really. You know, they'll talk about all kinds of fluff and nonsense, but the actual issues, you know, if they do talk about them, a lot of it is false. It's spun out of control, and people don't get the facts. Nobody seems to know what's going on. I mean, we've dumbed down this country so much because we just flat out refuse to allow them to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And that's a poor reflection on the American people because they don't know what's going on and they don't insist on knowing. They don't, you know, they're not insisting on getting it. I mean, it's so much nonsense. It is so much nonsense. It's so frustrating. So I'm so glad that real people like you, like me, are getting out there and trying to get this information out so that people understand the real issues.
Yes.
You're now in South Dakota?
Yes, Aberdeen, South Dakota.
And do they have a whole lot of HOAs in Aberdeen, South Dakota?
No, they don't have a whole lot of anything here. But that's probably real bad. I should not say that. I've had, kidding aside, I've had a great time here, and there's really terrific people here. It's quite a bit different from any other place I've lived. I lived in Fargo back in the 80s when I was recruiting for the Marine Corps. But it's a lovely town, and the people here are very friendly, and so it's pretty it's more of a quiet type of thing. I remember I was watching the Coen brothers who had done the movie Fargo and talked about the miniseries Fargo that came out over the past couple of years, and they grew up the Coen brothers grew up in Minneapolis. And they referred to the area as Siberia with family restaurants.
Siberia with family restaurants. I love it. Well, the reason I asked you is because I hear from people from around the country, and I don't think I've ever heard from anyone from either South or North Dakota. So there must be some places in this country that are not plagued by this horrible thing. It's just, I don't know. Life is complicated enough as it is without adding to it by having all these stupid HOAs going around with all these little Hitler-type people who are just so involved with their own self-importance that they make life even more miserable for everyone else. But it's, because South Dakota, I've never heard anyone. Nobody's ever contacted me and said, I live in South Dakota and my board member is doing this. You just don't hear from them.
Oh, yeah. No.
You just don't hear from them.
I didn't think they were going to show my film in the Black Hills. because I had been not discussed that HOA problems up there. But I knew the people that ran that film festival, they were interested in the project. And I think it was because they believed people were having a hardship and they wanted to show that. It just happened to, you know, be about homeowner associations, which, you know, when I go up for the Q&A and they're saying, how can this go? Does this really go on? I mean, it was just caught people off guard out there.
Well, I think that's good because somebody is going to come along one day and somebody is going to start telling them about how wonderful HOAs are. And if they've never heard anything about it, I mean, it, on the surface, it can sound wonderful. You know,
yeah.
Oh, you'll have these parks and you don't have to do anything and it's carefree living and it's a community. They don't tell you about being fined into oblivion. They don't tell you about having your home foreclosed on. They don't tell you about being harassed and abused. They don't tell you about people shooting your dog. They don't tell you that they're going to come after your kids because they don't like kids. I mean, the stories that we hear just go on and on and on. Or if you're in a condo and your property is, or there's a leak and they don't like it, they're not going to fix it. So they're going to leave it there. And people get mold, and the mold just gets onto everything, and people get sick,
yeah.
And they move out. The stories are just unstoppable. I mean, they just keep going on and on and on. And so it's good for some place like South Dakota or North Dakota where people are not aware of it. They don't know about, you know, their neighbors aren't talking about it. It's not something that's in the local papers. It's not something they're aware of. But as long as they know, if anybody ever comes to them and says, oh, by the way, we think we're going to turn this into a mandatory membership HOA, they're going to say, haha, not on your Nelly. I'm going to call Rodney and ask him because he knows all about this.
I've heard of those stories. Hey, let's make this neighborhood a mandatory HOA.
Yeah.
It'll be like Shangri-La.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have Beanie Adolph. I mean, that's how she got involved.
Yeah.
And she's done an amazing job.
Oh, yeah.
An amazing job. So, I know you've had a lot of questions, but what's been the reaction to the hoax?
I would say, I mentioned earlier, anger. People get angry. I don't know how many people I've had come up to me to say, we watched your film, and it made me very angry. And they didn't go on and say, anger, I didn't like your movie, or I didn't like the way this presented. They just said, it just made me very angry about what was going on with these people. I presented this documentary more as a tragedy, not as, I didn't really have a close ended with it. Like, this could go anywhere. This could get better. This could get worse. You don't really know. And it is a tragedy. It's a problem that's going on and on. And I know you've talked to so many people about this yourself, Shu. And it's all one big tragedy that there's no resolution. There's no light at the end of the tunnel anywhere. And I know I'm talking through quite a few cliches today, but where is the place that we're going to get to where something works the other way, where people are not having their rights trampled on? And where there is some kind of legislation that'll say, hey, you can't do this anymore. And it's like, when are we going to get there?
You know what? Because people have been lied to, a lot of people are willing to give up so much because they believe that their property rights or their property values are being preserved. And that's not true. I think people need to understand it. They'll go, yeah, well, I don't mind being told, you know, that I've got the wrong sized mulch in my, I mean, come on, how stupid is that? That my mulch is the wrong size, that I can't have, you know, the big mulch, I've got to have the small mulch, or I can't have shredded mulch. It's got to be a certain size or a certain shape of mulch. That's going to reduce their property values. I mean, come on, that's insane. I don't mind doing that as long as they protect my property values, but they're not protecting their property values. Who in their right mind wants to be nagged to death about the size of their mulch or the kind of vehicle they drive? I mean, the car you were talking about, there were two cars. One was, there were two trucks. One was Lincoln, I think, and I don't know a whole lot about cars. But
the other one was Ford.
And the one was
Which is the same company.
It was the same company. It was the same truck. It was just the name on the vehicle. They were
exactly.
both white, and they were both next to each other. And somebody had a picture of both of them. You couldn't tell the difference.
Exactly.
You couldn't tell the difference. But the guy with the Ford, who probably got the same truck and didn't pay quite as much, was devaluing property values, while the guy who paid a little more and had a Lincoln thing on it was, hey, that's great. We're just upscale over here. I mean, how ridiculous.
It would just go on. And then I remember where we had that. I contacted the Ford president, and he said, we don't allow any vehicles in the driveways at Myers. They have to. We don't let them on the street. So I went out to the property and filmed all the vehicles that were laying, you know, all out in the street. And it was him, it was the board president saying, we have a rule. We don't allow anybody to leave their vehicles out at night. But then on the side where nobody's around, he's telling people, it's okay if you have Cadillacs and the Lincoln Town cars, you can leave those out. But don't, those Fords have got to go. They've got to go in the garage. And then he would just start talking. And this was, you know, behind closed doors where this was going on. And one of the homeowners there told me about it. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. And then I remember looking at a picture one day. You've got all the, I think you had about five or six board presidents and Frisco all standing together, and in the background you've got the Frisco mayor with them. And I just thought, this is the same town where they had an HOA that did that thing to Michael Clower, where they said, we're going to take your house and sell it for $3,200. They sold it to Mark DeSanto, who actually called it one time. And he flipped it to a guy for $135,000.
Well, do you remember Winona Blevins, the 80-year-old?
Yeah. The same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing happening. And those Winona Blevins and Michael Clara, those are 10 years apart.
Yeah. And they still do it.
I'm just thinking, we don't give shoplift. I mean, and I'm not accusing anybody of not paying their HOA dues of, you know, being shoplift or anything like that, but we don't take people that get behind on their debts or stuff, and we don't lock them up or take their house because he missed a credit card payment. We're going to take his house. It's just that we don't do that as a society. But the HOA, they want that money to pay their dues and their attorneys and their management companies. They want that, and they'll take that $200,000-$300,000 home and sell it to get that money back, and they'll sell that house just to get those fees, and they'll have people that will buy that home for whatever, you
pennies.
Know, $3,000-$4,000 so they can flip it.
Pennies.
And it shouldn't be set up. It shouldn't be easy to do something like that.
No, it shouldn't. It really shouldn't, but that's where the issues and the problems are. But Rodney, good luck. Please keep us posted on when we will be able to see the hoax. And
sure thing. It should be online again, I believe, in a few months, but I will
let me know.
Post it. If you go to Facebook, it's the hoax.
Let me know.
And you can also find it there. My name, Rodney Gray, G-R-A-Y, on Facebook. But it should be online again very shortly.
Thank you so much for joining us, Rodney.
Sure thing.
Good luck. Thank you.
You have a good day. Bye now.
Bye.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.